Today, it's a taxing time, but make sure you do it right. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and property news. Today, I'm joined by Alan Mason, a best-selling author and also accountant who knows a lot about tax. Hi, Alan, how are you doing?
Hi, Martin. Doing very well, actually, with less than 2 weeks to go before the end of the financial year.
Yeah, it doesn't take long, does it, for the tax year to come around? Now, you've written a best-selling book, The Tax Secrets of the Rich, but the truth is that even if you're less rich, getting across your tax and thinking about it right is really, really important, isn't it?
Exactly. And honestly, you just cannot leave it to the last minute. You don't want to be a victim you will not get a thank you card from the tax office. I have not seen one yet in my 40 years as a chartered accountant. So you need to be a little bit ahead of the game, proactive rather than reactive.
Right. And just to be clear, we sort of have till the end of October really to go through the process. But the tax year ends at the end of June. So if you're going to do any, finalization, it has to be done before the 30th of June this year.
In some cases, in other cases, you can take up journal entries or entries can be accrued. But certain things, yes, you do need to do before June 30, and you are required to do it before June 30. For instance, superannuation, minutes for a trust have to be written before June 30. So just be a little bit careful of that.
Okay. Well, you've got six tips for people to think about. And one of the ones to talk about first is this thing called bring forward expenditure from 24 into 2023. Now, what's that about?
Well, the tax office allows you to prepay expenditure up to 12 months. And what you're doing is you're pulling forward from the 25 year into the 24 year. And the reason you might do that is because maybe in this particular year you've had a large profit, where you've had a capital gain, or you've had some sort of event that has resulted in a windfall for the government and a downfall for you, but notwithstanding, prepayments have to be actually paid before June 30. So you can't take up an accrual. So I mentioned earlier, some things have got to actually be physically out of your bank account. Prepayments is one of those.
Right. Okay. So again, it's thinking ahead and planning ahead and making sure that you take advantage of that opportunity to shift from one year to the next. But again, it has to be done before the end of this tax year, right?
Exactly. And I have a very simple example. Let's say in 24, you had a capital gain and you're looking like you might have to pay the government $50,000, $100,000 or something, and you've got other rental properties. Wouldn't it make sense to prepay the interest on your other rental properties, increase your loss, reduce your capital gain? It's not rocket science, it's just about planning.
Right. And you mentioned rental property. You've got another one specifically with regard to the rental property and maybe prepaying a year's interest on the loan. Now, that's an interesting one.
It is. And I've done this myself many times where I've had that exact scenario. I've had a high profit in that particular year, so I thought I'll prepay a year's interest. It is a carry forward, so you're losing the deduction in the next year, or if you prepay the next year and you keep doing it, it leaves itself out. But in effect, you are creating a timing difference.
Right. So again, it's a matter of just being across it and thinking about whether it makes sense or it may not make sense, but in some cases it could. And I guess one of the observations here is that sometimes people need to get the best advice to be able to start making some of these adjustments because they're not always straightforward, are they?
No, they're not. And honestly, people get it wrong. I've seen many cases where people think they've done the right thing. They think they've covered their tax, but they haven't.
Exactly right. And unfortunately, the tax office is not forgiving it. It's not known for its largesse, is it?
Well, they're not going to forgive you and say, oh, look, I'm sorry, you paid your super on the 2nd of July. It's okay. Simple mistake. We'll allow it. No, the law's the law.
Yeah, the rules are the rules. Now, you've also got an observation here about the superannuation caps for prior years. This is something, again, which I think a lot of people don't fully understand, but there is an opportunity here potentially if you've got unused caps.
Exactly. So, and can I tell you, if you don't use it, you lose it. So they drop off. So you've got a 5-year cap rule that allows you to bring forward. Let's say last year you only contributed 10,000, you could contribute another 17,500 this year on top of your 27,500. So remember, superannuation is taking money out of your left pocket and putting it into your right pocket. It is not lost money. It's money that you're just moving from one investment to another investment that you get a tax deduction on the way through. So don't sort of be concerned about that. And honestly, it's a good thing. You should be building up a nice big nest egg. You should be trying to add to your super so that in time, as you get older, you've got something there to retire on.
Yeah, and in fact, the tax structures within super are actually quite beneficial relative to ordinary personal income tax, isn't it?
Exactly. And I see super as a tax haven. Mm. A lot of people don't think of it that way, but it is. And as you get a little bit older and have a few grey hairs, the ability and the need to do that is much greater. When the super fund's in pension mode, it pays zero tax, and there's no other environment that would be the case. Zero tax on income, zero tax on money that's withdrawn for your retirement, for living. So a lot of people don't understand that. They don't pick up on it.
Right. And that could be, a fund that basically your employer pays into and you potentially pay into, or a self-managed super fund. Both of those structures are equally beneficial.
Exactly. It just has to be a compliant fund. So a self-managed fund, and as you build up a nest egg, you might go, let's move this from the industry fund into self-managed, and let's create my own share portfolio or investment property portfolio, and let's manage it myself or yourself. And take control. And many people do that with a self-managed fund. Australia, we have a massive number, 600,000, I think it is, top of my head, self-managed funds. So don't think that you don't have control of your money. And when you reach a condition of release, and there are three conditions of release, age 60, retire from a position of employment, incapacity, that's three.
Yeah, and I'll just add one other point. And there is actually, if you're selling a property and you're over a certain age, you have the ability to pull some of the equity out and put it into superannuation, again, at an advantaged position, right? So that's something else just to think about in terms of as you manage your tax affairs and as you, move into later years, again, being across these different structures and opportunities are pretty important.
Exactly. And Martin, to be honest, people need to plan. You need to think about this. If you want to lose half your money to the government, then okay, probably wouldn't be listening to your podcast. But it's crazy. I mean, why would you want to do that? Why not plan, work out in advance, minimize your tax, on the way through? So we're now June. I can tell you, I know exactly what my income will be for the 24 year. I run it on zero. I know exactly for all of my entities, what profit, what the losses on properties, shares and everything else. I know where I am and I know what to do before June 30. Why taxpayers won't do this, I do not know. And the tax office probably is thankful that a lot of people are tardy. And I did make a mention that a lot of people pay more tax than they should. And you think, that sounds odd, but they do. They do. Why? Because they're tardy. It's slack.
Right. And the point here is we're not talking about anything that's illegal. This is just about playing within the guidelines, within the rules, but minimizing the obligations that you have to the tax department, which is perfectly appropriate.
Exactly. And let me just tell you a myth. There's a couple of myths around. One of them is that the more money I make, the more tax I pay. That's not correct. There are heaps and heaps of methods in which you can reduce your tax. For instance, rental property, 50% CGT discount, providing it's held for over a year. Sole and principal residence, tax-free. Superannuation, in a super fund, income is tax-free. So it is not true that the more money I make, the more tax I pay. You just need to manage it better. And, if you've got an account that uses that mantra and says that, then I think you've got a lazy account and it's time to change.
Yes,
That's how I see it.
not all accountants are created equal when it comes to providing good advice and best advice, unfortunately. So it is important that people have enough of an understanding of some of these basic principles to ask the right questions. And if you aren't getting the right service from your accountant, then find someone else.
Exactly. And educate yourself. The most important person in the world is you. And read self-help books on how to run your life better, tax books on what to look out for and how perhaps to manage your affairs a little better. And as I said earlier, you've got to be proactive rather than reactive. And accountants that do their work for their client at a rush, and you mentioned October, but in fact, most businesses have till April or May. Accountants that do the work on the last day that is due and rush you to sign, that's terrible. They should be shot because you've got no ability to plan it. Here it is. Here's a fait accompli. Sign here. Your tax bill's this. And you go, oh, I didn't know it was going to be that. And then what can you do? It's very hard. So that's not the way to run your affairs.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a surprise. It should be something which you actually are cross and have structure against it. Let's talk about another of your tips, which relates to a new computer or phone or, other expenses related to your job. Now, there are some quite strict rules there, but if you are actually buying those particular items for work, you can actually get the system to work for you as well.
Exactly. And there are a myriad of pitfalls in this. There are a myriad of different tests that you need to, or hoops that you need to jump through. If you're a business owner, you've got a $20,000 limit. It used to be 150. That changed last year, and the government in the budget increased it to 20,000 for another year. You've got other small amounts that you can deduct as you, if you're a salary and wage earner, 300. So it varies a little bit. If you're an employee and you want to buy a new computer, generally you've got to write off for that. But you've got to make sure you keep the right paperwork, and you need to check what category you fall into, whether it falls into work from home, which is at a set rate, which means you can't claim those things, or if you claim it a different way, you can claim 100% write-off. So just be a little careful. It's a minefield. For salary and wage earners. For business owners, it's easier and better. Unfortunately, the case is that business owners could generally manipulate, is that the right word? Can I use that word? They're taxed a lot better than a salary and wage earner.
You can say adjust.
Adjust. Okay, we'll use that word.
Now, one other thought here is if you have extra income incoming at some point, and you have the opportunity to switch the timing of that and push it out into 2025, for example, that could be quite beneficial too.
Exactly. It's all about timing. And again, I said that you need to know what the year looks like. And maybe you want to bring forward some of that income if you've got a loss in this year, you offset against that loss. Or maybe you want to push it forward into the next year. Remember, there are a few rules about this. So just be careful. So, for instance, if you've got shares that you've sold and you've made a capital gain, you might have other shares that you've got that you have got losses on that you haven't sold, unrealized. So you may want to realize those losses to offset the gains. Think about buying them back maybe in July or August is a wash rule, anti-wash rule that affects that sell buy situation. Just be careful of that. Yes, moving income or expenses from one year to the next is a valuable tool. And it works both ends. So it's income, of course, you could, and it depends on the kind of business you're into, because sometimes you have to take up work in progress. There are a few tax rulings about that. In other situations, you don't. You may want to be on a cash versus accrual basis. So that again allows you to defer. So cash means you don't, it's on a received basis. And if you haven't received it, then it's not assessable. A lot of little tricks of the trade that help keep us accountants employed. Oh, sorry about that. Allow us to charge a bit more. Sorry about that too.
Yeah, but I'll give you one very practical example. If you have a term deposit and you think about whether you want to have the term deposit maturing this year or next year, right, just because of how long you actually lock the money away for, that can shift the interest from 1 year to the next in terms of when you actually have to tackle it. Now, some people don't think about that until it's too late, but when you actually think about setting up a term deposit, think about the tax implications of when those funds are going to mature.
Exactly. So instead of taking a 30-day term deposit that will mature on the 30th of June, take a 60-day that will mature on the 30th of July. Simple.
Exactly. But again, you've got to think ahead. You know, you can't just retrospectively try and fix it. You've got to actually plan ahead and think about it. Another one you've got, and this is quite interesting, thinking about if you've got a property that you're going to think about selling, right? When's the best time to think about actually making the transaction? And when does the transaction date actually apply from a tax perspective?
Okay, so people get this wrong all the time. I've seen it many times. It's actually contract date. So even though you might settle that, let's say you've signed the contract on the 30th of June and it's up and it goes unconditional. So the rule is that when the contract's unconditional, in other words, if you're selling to somebody and there's a finance clause in there and that person has to get their finance before the contract becomes unconditional, it'll be at that point that the taxing point will be. Now, just be aware also that the tax office can get it wrong because they don't know on a contract whether this is unconditional. And sometimes on your pre-fill, it'll show a sale that's occurred in June because the contract stated that, but it really was unconditional in July or August. So a little bit of a tip there, and maybe you might want to think about how you could play with that in terms of conditional and unconditional. But generally, it is contract date, not settlement date.
Yeah, I've seen a few people get caught out with that and suddenly discover that they've actually, you know, they're in one tax year rather than the one they thought they were going to be in, and then they've got a massive job to try and sort it all out.
Now, yeah, you can't fix it.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and it's a bit like you know, you're on an escalator, but once the escalator hits the top, you've hit the end of the year, and then you're in the next year. You know, other than a few minor tweaks with journals and things. Now, one of the things that you said, interestingly, is that you want to be careful about not giving your money to the ATO interest free. Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's two wise words: interest free. Because you're paying your tax as you go. And sometimes you'll get paid as you go installments that you've got to pay. And maybe you might want to deal with that in a different way. And remember, too, that the tax office doesn't know your situation. So you might have a year where it's been great and then the next year it's been bad. And they'll hit you up with pay as you go installments each quarter. You should go in and revise those based on what you know that new tax year is going to be. So say you've had a great year in 23 and you know, you paid, for ease of calculation, you paid $100,000 in tax, you will pay four installments of $25,000 in the 24 year. So don't pay that if 24 is not going to be a big year like it was in 23. Amend and vary, and don't let your time, there's a time period for that. If you miss it, the tax office will still want their money. So if you're at 30 days outside of the amendment of the PAYG installment, you'll have to pay it. And they will sue you for it. They will actually have a debt collector onto you and you'll go, oh, but I haven't, my income's less, or I'm now unemployed or whatever it might be. And I've had situations where the tax office has taken a client to court. And I've stood up in court and I've said, this is not correct. He's had a bad year. It was just outside the review period. We need to review it. And they've said, no, it still applies. It's still a debt. So be careful.
Yeah. And the concept of amending those, you know, those installments, as it were, you can do that within the process. But again, you've got to be across it. And I think that, you know, the message keeps coming back to the same thing, doesn't it? You can't just set and forget. You can't just say, oh, well, the accountant's going to sort it all out. That it's really important to to really get across this. And I guess there's a couple of other sort of closing thoughts. The first is we have the tax bans pretty much frozen at the moment. So we have a creeping grab on people's income, and that's going to continue for some time yet. So, you know, more people are paying more tax, so this becomes ever more important. And I think the other point I'd make from my own experience is the tax office don't always get it 100% right. I've had a few situations where the initial assessment that they've come up with is just wrong. And so it's really important to look at the assessment that you get to make sure that they've actually interpreted the input data correctly and are actually making the right calculations, because sometimes they do get it wrong.
Yes, I had one earlier this year, 300,000. It was wrong by 300,000. And I went back and objected and they fixed it. But it was like, you did right. Tax office can make mistakes. They miss things, sometimes to your advantage, but not to your disadvantage. But anyway, or to their disadvantage. But so you've got to be on top of it. And you're right about not leaving it to your accountant. I know. You've got to be proactive with these things. You've got to be on top of it yourself. And clients who say, oh, it's the accountant's fault they didn't lodge on time, or it's the accountant's fault they didn't get this done. It's the client is responsible. And unfortunately, in my profession, and like any profession, there are good and bad. There are a lot of accountants who are so under the pump that they miss things. They're not proactive because they're just too busy, and it causes them to be not as close to the client as they should be, not as close to the income, and not able to do things in a timely manner simply because they're too overworked.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, it all gets compressed into a relatively short time frame. And you know, some accountants also, of course, they receive information late from their clients too, so they sort of get caught in this pincer movement, right? So if you can plan ahead as well and make sure you've got your documentation appropriate and complete, so that effectively it's not a last minute rush on your side of the fence, it means the accountants can also spend the time that they need to spend on it. But you know, if you leave it to the last minute, then it's a panic on both sides. And I guess, you know, you were Carrie Packer's former accountant, right? You know, years ago.
Yes.
I suspect that, you know, affluent people are quite well prepared and structured to deal with some of these issues. But I suspect that, you know, ordinary Australians just don't think about this stuff. And, you know, it can be a bit of a last minute panic or worse, which means you can end up paying a lot more than you should.
Exactly. Well, entrepreneurial clients like Kerry, and we look after quite a few whose names you know, usually don't mind to spend the money to get it right. They don't accept the status quo. They challenge all the time. So that's why they are able to pay less tax than the average person. And they're able to, they've got a mindset, if you like, that has some thinking outside the square. So many times it will be, you sure that's the case? You sure? Can't we do something about that? And it forces you to think. And in my career, many times I've had to pull a rabbit out of the hat to achieve a particular purpose and a goal. And it, you know, early with Kerry, it would be like, come on, you got to find a solution. Come on, come on. You know, I'm not paying this. This is not going to work. You've got to find something. And it does. It makes you go away, think about it. Kerry said to me, initially, he employed me, he said, son, and I said, yes, Dad. No, I didn't say that. He said, son, you got to be worth double what I pay you. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm an accountant. How can I be worth double what I'm being paid? But it makes you think. And I've honestly been, that's been my mantra in my entire life, to make sure I am worth more than I'm paid, come up with solutions, pull a rabbit out of the hat occasionally. And I can tell you, I pulled some big ones out of the hat in this last year. Some really big ones.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, look, I've enjoyed speaking with you, Alan, and let's talk about your best-selling book, Tax Secrets of the Rich. It's a really good read. Thoroughly recommended. Yeah. Here's a visual aid.
Exactly. And I can I tell you, I've had, this is the fourth edition. It's been a bestseller every year. Can I tell you that everybody I've spoken to, I've said, Can you tell me what, how I could improve it? Are there any areas that you think maybe I waffle on too much or whatever? In most cases, they haven't been able to tell me any way to improve, which is, and so Martin, if you can, I'd appreciate it. But it's been a bestseller every year, last 4 years. We sell more every year. It's become a bit of a cult classic. And I'm surprised at how many people that I meet say, oh, yes, I've got your book, or I've read your book, or et cetera, et cetera. And so it is nice. And I wrote it because I was pushed to write it by some friends that I'm involved with. And it's been great.
Well, terrific. Well, we'll put links and things below for those who want to go and get a copy. It is, I think, worth a read. And as you say, the beauty of it is updated on a regular basis. So it's, you know, it's current. And in the current environment with so many tax changes and so many other things going on so many cross currents, it's really good to get the latest and greatest insights. Alan, I want to say thank you very much for your insights today. Really appreciate it. And
My pleasure.
good luck to everybody as they approach the magic 30th of June.
Okay. Thank you, Martin. Thank you.
Cheers. Take care.
Yes, bye.